Thanks for attending the Madison Food Policy Council meeting of Wednesday, March 19th, 2025. This meeting is being held virtually and is also being recorded per Madison General Ordinance 33.01, Section 12. Please adhere to the virtual meetings etiquette by doing the following. All Food Policy Council members, please keep cameras on during the meeting. Community members, guests, and staff, please keep cameras off during the meeting unless speaking. And all attendees, please keep mics muted unless called upon by the chair after raising your hand virtually. Attendees calling in with their phones can use star 6 to mute and unmute in the Zoom platform and star 9 to raise your hand. That is our thing. So yes, we are calling this to order. Nick's doing the virtual roll call. And our first item is approval of last month's minutes, which you can find through Madison Legistar, or I believe they were linked in the last email you got, next to last email you got from Nick. So I'm looking for a motion to approve, after which we can do any edits if there's any needed. Chris?
I move to approve our February minutes.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
Thanks, Alder Evers. Okay, now we are at public comment. Is there any public comment? The main action item, well, the action item is the 2025 seed grants.
No public comments tonight.
Okay, and anyone, I see there's a phone number. Is that a public comment?
Sorry, that's Rebecca Kimball. I'll read it.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks. Let's move along. Disclosures and recusals. I will do a disclosure, which is that my organization also applied for a seed grant. I don't think I need to recuse because we weren't on the recommended list, so I'll just disclose that that happened. And I don't see Hetty, so she doesn't. Anyway, I'll say if she does jump on later that she is also works for Rooted. So that, I don't know how that works, but okay. Is there any items of new business? Or sorry, that was very fast of me. Does anyone else have any disclosures or recusals for the seed grant vote?
I'm not aware if it was a seed or a pie grant that REAP applied for, but I do work for REAP Food Group and would recuse myself if they applied for a seed grant. And then I also think there was another seed grant for the Dane County Food Collective, which I'm also a part of.
Okay, thanks, Noah. Okay, seeing no other hands for disclosures or recusals, we'll move on to new business, which is where you bring up something you'd like to discuss next time related to food policy. Okay, let's move right along to the action. And that is the 2025 seed grants. The committee's made a set of recommendations, which you can see in the attachments. Is there someone from the committee to talk about that? Looks like I just see George coming up.
Just me, yeah.
Oh, sorry, not just.
No, I'm not, I know, man.
Go right ahead.
Hey, everybody. George Reistad, Business Development Specialist in EDD, staff person for Seed Grants. Let me see if I can share my screen here with you all. Can folks see this? Getting some head nods. All right, cool. I can't see everybody at the same time. Chris gets a thumbs up. All right, we're good. So let me see if I can move. It's weird when you try to do this because like all the different Zoom menus are kind of right in the way of all the functionality you need. But we'll just keep it like this. I go full screen, but I can't get to the menu and I don't want to putz around with it. So for 2025 C grants, just want to kind of, well, first of all, I want to start off by saying thank you to the C grants review team. Historically, it's been about 5 or 6 members. This year, we had to actually up it to 8 because we got so many applications. It would have been completely out of hand if we only would have had 6. Everybody would have had to do like 20 something applications. So I want to thank everybody who took the time to volunteer to be on the review team and then actually took the time to read all of the assigned applications and score them in a, I think, a fair but judicious manner. So I appreciate all that. As you can see, we received quite a few applications this year, 42 seed grant applications requesting almost $320,000. Just for context, the seed grants program itself, the budget authority is $50,000 as a total funding pool. So we received more than what, 6 times the amount that we had to give. So it just shows how competitive these grants are and really what the community demand for these grants are. So we had record community demand here. I think we far exceeded the number of applications, the maximum number of applications that we received in the past year. And so it's not, it's in the funding recommendations memo. It's not here in the slides, but members of the review team really wanted to memorialize that need. So that's, there's a whole paragraph in the memo that really kind of goes into the record community demand that we're seeing. And really just with everything going on at the federal level, with everything going on in our communities nowadays, we just anticipate that need going up, unfortunately. And so again, just want to thank everybody, lay out kind of the context for the applications we received this year. And then lastly, I'll just go over the funding philosophy for the program. A couple of years back, we kind of pivoted to trying to fully fund a smaller number of applications versus partially fund a higher number of applications, kind of what we've called deeper versus wider. One of the motivating reasons behind that is that we actually found that partially funding more applications, while that sounds great when you say it out loud and when you're in the process of doing it, it actually, from an organizational perspective, is kind of makes the job of the organization much harder in terms of fulfilling the goals and the objectives and trying to achieve the outcomes of what they posited in their application. If somebody's applying for $10,000 to do X, Y, and Z, and you give them $5,000, they might only be able to do X, right? So it's difficult to try to expect outcomes when you're really slashing people's funding. And so that's where we kind of adopted this philosophy of trying to fully fund applications that we received that were meritorious. So in this funding cycle, we funded 7 applications for 2025, again, out of 42. So that's, again, it just shows kind of what we're able to do with what we have versus what is requested. And so moving then into the actual applicants themselves, the 7 recommended recipients of seed funding are the Madison Area Food Pantry Gardens, Lakeview Community School, Allied Food Pantry, Meadowood Health Partnership, Lucier Community Education Center, Neighborhood House Community Center, and Madison Public Library Foundation. I won't read into every single, and Josh, I do see your hand. I'll call you in just one sec. I don't want to read into every single application, and it's also laid out in the funding memo themselves. But it just shows, it shows kind of the diversity of what's being requested. Additionally, there were lots of applications that were, again, very meritorious and, had a lot of good ideas and wanted to accomplish a lot of good in the community that we just were not able to fund. And so because of the structure of how we set up our review team, we had 3 review members per application. And so you really, to some extent, you cut out the variability by the averaging of all the scores that are submitted. We've been doing this the last couple of years. We think it's a very well-rounded process, but again, the need just far outstrips what we have to supply in terms of funding. And so these are the applications that we landed on as a review team that we're recommending to the Food Policy Council for passage for funding. I'm happy to answer questions as I can. I didn't review every single one of these applications and I didn't read all 42, I'll just be honest. But I'm happy to answer questions or possibly call on members of the review team if questions arise that I cannot answer. Josh, I see that your hand is up.
Thanks, George. Can you hear me?
Yep, can hear you.
Okay, great. It's just a recusal. I am catching up to speed after a long time away from the committee. MMSD school is one of the applicants for the C grant, so I must recuse myself.
Yep, that's fair. Thanks for throwing that out, Josh.
Yep.
Got that noted. Thanks, Josh.
Opening it up to the floor, any questions from folks? I mean, especially for folks who are kind of longstanding Food Policy Council members, it's a relatively cut and dry process. You know, I hope that people are confident in our application review process. But obviously we want to bring it to the Food Policy Council to be able to answer any questions you have on process or applications and the program itself. So again, happy to be able to offer that up. And yeah, if anybody has any questions, just feel free to throw them out. Noah, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I'm just curious if you could talk a little more about like strategy or like overall strategy of how you selected these grants for recommendation. It seems like a lot are related to sort of like emergency food access. I see some like culturally relevant food is another thing that I'm seeing a lot of. But yeah, I'm wondering if there was like pools for certain categories or any thought about like larger needs in the community, or is this just sort of like the most competitive grants or something like that?
It's a good question. And to kind of some of the points you brought up, there have been discussions in the past around like, do you create priority funding tracks or do you create different pools? At this point, you know, it's again, it's a pretty small pot of money. You know, I mean, I'm working on it. I feel like I say that every year, but it's true. It's just, you know, the folks probably don't need me to say this, but you know, the budget is just under a lot of pressure every year. And it seems like the pressure just goes up more and more every single year. But with that said, Noah, so there are no priority tracks or funds. I mean, we did talk about it, but I think in the end, we kind of landed on, we don't necessarily want to arbitrarily decide what is more important than other things, because to your point, an application that would request money for emergency food could be argued to be just as important as a community garden application or food systems education application, right? And so for us to really, I mean, to arbitrarily set a track is fine, I guess, too, if it's discussed and it's advertised and promoted. And I mean, if especially if maybe you switch it around every year, it's this thing this year, next year it's this other thing. But it's something that we kind of shied away from. And then to your point, there's a scoring system that essentially exists, and you know, a rubric and a scorer's criteria. And so basically, whichever applications receive the highest score across the three reviewer average is essentially how this all lands out. And so this year, these were the top seven applications, you know, and it's based on funding. These were the top seven applications that, you know, were the most competitive and secured the highest scores. Typically, we have some kind of like either like a weird remainder or a surplus, because we have a $50,000 pot and obviously the requests don't line up. So what we have to do is either do like a proportional reduction or a proportional addition, which is what happened last year. I think everybody got an extra $200, which, you know, who doesn't want more money? And this year, I think we had to cut everybody by $7. So it was actually pretty clean this year, but obviously we have to do some kind of budget reconfigurations to make the $50,000 work with the, you know, the application request that we get. So I hope that answered your question, Noah.
Yeah, that was helpful. If it's okay to keep going.
Yeah.
I would love to see the rubric. I'm sure it's publicly available, but if you could send it to me, I'd appreciate it. Or
it's top secret. No, and I can't send it to. No, yeah, it's public. Well, and I'll send it to you.
And then also just like through my capacity working on the food plan, like we should talk later, but just offering my services or like offering the team services to figure out how to strategize around securing more funding, because obviously that's a huge need.
Yep, I appreciate that. Nick, I thought I saw your hand up, and now I see Davika's hand up. Don't want to skip you, Nick, if you did have a question.
Sorry, I wanted to just chime in on the point that Noah made around some of the themes that emerged in the funding. I know in past Well, just to put it this way, I mean, clearly there's been a, as George outlined, there's a huge increase in the amount of grants that were and dollars that were requested this year. And I think it's very clear that a lot of that came in the food distribution like tranche or area. So it's pretty clear that the things we discussed last month as we outlined our food security report are also playing into some of the types of community serving and human service organizations that tend to apply for this fund year over year. Not always the same organizations, but people kind of working in the community that are trying to distribute food or have food as a component of their service delivery. It really is clear that actually paying for buying food for folks is a huge need at the moment. So, puts a fine point on some of the other themes and trends we're observing in the community.
Yep, that's a good point. Yeah, I appreciate that you touched on that because I meant to and I forgot. But you asked like, are there a lot of emergency? I mean, a good proportion of what we received were really coming from kind of the emergency food system sector. So appreciate that question. Appreciate the follow-up, Nick. Davika.
Yeah, actually, Nick said pretty much what I was going to say, that this like unprecedented record level of requests, I think is driven, yeah, it's driven by the need that we're seeing in the community. And just speaking from Second Harvest, we've lost a lot of funding. And so that ripple effect is showing up already in the community. And then I also just wanted to ask, I didn't know that Josh had joined the Food Policy Council, and is that in Dustin's place, or are they both on now? And welcome.
I guess I could let him speak for himself, but that is in place of Dustin. So
That's
we welcome
correct.
Josh.
And
Yeah.
thank you for the welcome.
Thanks, everybody. Again, don't want to cut off anybody. I see a bunch of hands going up now. Nicholas, Chris, I'll go with you. You're the only one left.
I'll do mine quick.
Okay.
I know there was the big report that came out last year, but is there individual of reporting that comes? I should know this because we've gotten a grant before, but are the individual reports like publicly available or on the website or anything or?
I mean, everything's publicly available
Yeah.
technically at the city, but so no, the individual evaluation reports aren't published. They're kind of, to your point, Nicholas, they're sent out, they're collected and then kept, and then basically they're around for when we do these larger evaluation reports like we did in 2024 with Extension. But they are not themselves, published. I think we keep them, and over the last 2 years or so, I've tried to simplify it. So now I kind of ask, like, did you meet the goals that were outlined in your application? Could you provide some pictures? Could you provide some client, testimonials or folks that you serve, testimonials from them? I think that kind of provides really good feedback. And then when we actually go in and do the deeper level evaluation, obviously we know who our recipients are. We can follow up with them, which you saw reflected in that last report. And a shout out to Extension for that report. But a good question, Nicholas. No, we do not publish per se, the individual evaluation reports that we get from organizations. Go ahead, Chris.
I don't have a question. I just want to thank the reviewers. I think looking over the recommendations, it looks to me like it meets the purpose, the mission, the intent of the seed grant. All these folks, and certainly fall in the food access areas that have been defined by the council. So I put my stamp of approval on them. I would say you could probably throw up the next seven folks, and I would probably approve them as well. And just looking at the 42 or the number of 42 applications, I just wonder how many more would have applied or may have applied, but knowing that it was a smaller pool of funding, said, we'll sit this one out and give other folks a chance. So good job. Thank you.
That's a point well made. Thanks, Chris. No, go ahead.
Yeah, just one more clarifying question. You mentioned that there will be a memo about this process that'll be produced. I'm just curious what the timeline on that is.
It is produced. It is
Oh, cool.
available right now. I don't have it in the slide deck because I don't want to do that to you all. But I think if you actually look at the agenda, Noah, it's an attachment to the C grant item. So it says like MFPC prez or something, and then it says like work group recommendations or something. So the second one is the memo.
Cool. Thank you.
But it, I mean, essentially has all the information that it has here. It's just longer.
Sweet. Thanks.
Yep, no problem. Any other questions? I'll just throw it out there. Any other questions for the group? Otherwise, if not, I would turn it over to the body to make a motion for approval. But obviously not trying to cut off questions if there are more.
Yeah, and sorry, I should have officially motioned to have George take over my power for a minute. But hopefully everyone was okay with that. Chris, it sounds like you almost made a motion before you backed off from that.
I'll make a motion now after those recusals and disclosures. I'm not sure who's left to make them, so I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the 2025 seed grant recommended applicants for
Second.
funding.
Did I hear a
Hold
second?
on.
There was
Yeah,
a
I'm a second.
sound.
Yes, I'm a second.
Okay. So just since we'll start doing Robert's good now. Now would be when you would make comments on this. Previous section was about questions. So if anyone has any comment, oh, Dave. Oh, Dave was perhaps motioning. Alder Evers.
Yeah, just to support the idea of the need for more money, and if anybody has any suggestions, because the scoring was bunched up. There were a lot of good applications. There, the next seven were not separated by that many points. So there were B plus applications that did not get funded. Basically, there were. In other words, there were applications that got above an 80 in scoring and did not get funded. 80 out of 100. And there were several that were within fractions of a point from each other below the last one that did get funded. So there were a lot of good applications, and there's a tremendous amount of need out there. So this may be cause for us to think about, can we get some matching funds from some other, ways of doubling or tripling this amount moving forward? I don't know if the city with our budget challenges are the source for that, but there were some applications that were more capital oriented rather than operating expense oriented. So there is some talk on the city side of perhaps that we could pull some out of our capital budget for that purpose. But if Noah and Chris and the rest of you have ideas of other sources of funding that could augment this, that clearly the need is there, and we could fund a lot of really good projects. It was tough. It was not easy.
Thanks, Alder Evers. Any other comments? Noah.
Yeah, just not. I don't have a specific recommendation, but I'm curious, like, if we would be interested in looking at private foundations as an additional source of funding. I think you guys do that for HRAP as well.
HRAP, I mean, to answer your original question, yes, we
Yeah.
would. I also think to your point, especially if we partnered with a non, well, most of the nonprofits apply for seed, but
Yeah.
like if, yeah, if we were to apply for, or partner with a nonprofit, even though in many entities they allow local governments to apply as well, I think we have a strong case in that obviously we have matching funds. We have matching funds in terms of like an actual cash match to verify and leverage. But we also have a lot of staff time that goes into this that we could use as in kind as well. I mean, I think there's an argument there. Obviously, like I've applied for a lot of grants in the past. One of the weaknesses we might have too is that like it's already there. And so they might look at it and be like, well, like yes, there is need, but at least it exists and it has institutional funding. So that it's like double-edged sword kind of thing. But that's not to say that I think we would be against exploring other avenues and opportunities to increase that outside of the city's own budget. So I'm not trying to put work obviously on any of our nonprofit partners, but if you had ideas, I think we would be a willing partner to explore those things. And I mean, as long as you're mentioning ATRAP, no, I mean, I think it would be the same thing. If there's other ideas, I mean, ATRAP's actually in pretty good shape, just the way it is, but it's like more money is never a bad thing. So anyway, I think, yeah, we would be open to having any discussions if there are, private foundations or other sources of funding that would be attractive or compelling to explore for seed grants. So then it's not all on the city.
Just to follow up, I don't have any current connections that I'm thinking about, but I'm happy to start having those conversations, especially related to the food plan, about sort of consolidating resources and pooling our efforts across different programs.
Awesome. Appreciate that.
Nick.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting thread around the potential opportunities to connect this to other parts of work beyond just the city. And I think, Noah, as your role on the food plan illustrates, this could be something that could emerge as a connection in that plan and help shape future goals around investments in this kind of, this is a form of infrastructure too, right? So there's opportunities to invest in mini grants that could inspire much greater and work in our community. So I think this is something that very definitely needs to emerge in that plan as we move forward with that work.
Okay. Yeah, I'll leave that in a vague new business arena. Seeing no further comments, I will, and hearing a first and second to approve, I will assume unanimous consent unless I see a hand for a roll call vote on approving these recommendations. Just want to make sure I got that language right. Yes, seeing no hands, the motion passes. Thanks, George. Feel free to stick around or be done for the day. Moving along, report from the chair. Y'all scooped me, but welcome to Josh Perkins, the new council representative for the city. We liked having Dustin around, and I'm glad to see you around as well, Josh. Well, I'm not entirely sure if we have openings, but we are always open to new applications for members.
We
We can
do
always
still
put
have
people.
one vacancy.
Okay, thank you, Nick. Apologies there. So yeah, we have a vacancy, and even if two people want to apply, they can, and we can always have a waiting list. Or decide. Okay, on to the regular business reports. Regional food system planning.
Yeah, that's me. Kind of an interesting day today. So don't have anything planned to talk about, but just to give you an update, a little over a week ago, we got news that our funding was frozen for this project from the federal government. And later today, we found out that it was unfrozen and we can start submitting payments again. So we just spent little over a week doing some contingency planning, rebudgeting, figuring out what our timeline is, and now looks like we're going back to plan A. A lot of you, or some of you, were in the room for our food plant launch event on February 27th at Madison College. That was us sort of after a year of project planning and figuring out our scope of work on the project. that was us launching it to the public and getting people excited about the work that we're doing and finding ways for them to tap in. That event was a huge success. We had over 100 people in the room at Madison College, standing room only, a lot of energy in the room. We did some community engagement while we were there, presented the project, and had signups for people to get involved. One of the aspects of the project that I'm really excited to talk about, and that is possible again now that we have funding, is the strategy that we're using that we're calling decentralized community engagement. So we have $30,000 set aside for community organizations to tap into the project and host their own community engagement sessions. With the help of Abba Tucker, we're creating facilitation templates and data collection templates that those community partners can use. And they will have, we have this Google form for them to submit their ideas for community engagement. But the idea is that we'll have funding up to $1,500 per engagement session. As of last week, I think we had almost $15,000 worth of requests in already for that funding. And obviously, we were figuring out ways to communicate to folks that we didn't have funding, so that will reopen again. So, sorry, we're just kind of in this gray area. But the good news is the funding is currently open. We're working on trying to secure that money from the USDA because the function of the grant is that it's a reimbursement grant, which really put the brakes on us when we found out that the funding was frozen because REAP, as the project manager, can't foot the bill of costs up front. So now we're readjusting, looking ways to get that $30,000 secured. So that we can ensure that we can do that community engagement. But all that to say, I see that as the way forward for stakeholders in our community to get involved with the food plan. We also have consumer surveys and a farmer survey that are available for people to engage with. I think we're at over 300 consumer surveys already filled out. So feeling good about those numbers, but still looking for help to push that out into the community, especially in rural communities in Dane County. But kind of an interesting phase of the project. I can circle back and send out ways that folks can get involved. I also feel like an important next step for this council is us creating a calendar of events that will include existing ways for people to get involved, as well as tapping into some of those decentralized community engagement facilitations. We'd love it if council members were able to show up to those meetings, just sit in to hear what's going on in the community, what are people's needs, and ways they can get involved. So I would say look for an email following this meeting with updated information about how to get involved on the project. But big feeling of relief today. And trying to get back into that momentum and excitement coming out of the food plan launch event on the 27th. So happy to answer any questions if folks have any.
Thanks, Noah. Glad to hear it eventually worked out for now. Regional ag and food sovereignty, we are. I'm going to say in the final stages of figuring out a meeting. Thanks everyone for your patience. But lots to work on, so I'll be back to you very soon. Dane Food Access Network.
Yeah, Dane and Food Access Network has been continuing to meet, and I think the themes we've talked about tonight already around the demand at the food pantries have been a clear thread in the conversation at that in that space. The report that we released last month from Public Health and Second Harvest has folks seem to have received that well and are potentially able to put that to good use in their own work and potential resource gathering for some sources. So beyond that, the Food Access Network is one place that I tend to share some of the policy updates that are relevant to the work of providers in the food access universe. I'm happy to answer questions about that here or as part of my public health update later on. But generally, I think we're looking at a variety of different changes to the nutrition assistance landscape in the next year. There could be cuts to SNAP that could impact our whole ecosystem of who's getting food and where does it come from. There could be changes to grant-funded programs like we were just talking about. There could be things that affect our food system more broadly that could affect where and how our food arrives from. And then just to, we've got Josh here from the school district, and there could be changes to the school meal programs for the first time in many years as well. So there's just a lot of different factors, all of which put families in the community at greater vulnerability for hunger and for challenges in feeding their families. So I'll leave it there. Happy to answer any questions if people have any.
And we can talk about this later, Nick, but interested in bringing together folks across the system who are doing emergency food, especially or including faith organizations, and strategizing ways to address what will be a growing concern for food security in our community. But yeah, I guess I'm curious where people can already tap into those conversations. I think you run a couple of groups.
Yeah, thanks. So the Dane Food Access Network is the conversation that I host every month. We've been hosting that through public health since the start of the pandemic, and have kind of continued it because we identified that the themes around cross-sector collaboration in food and nutrition that we detail in our report last month are very clearly valuable for folks in these spaces. So food pantries, for example, tend to be very familiar with each other, but not so familiar with some of the other food distribution and service organizations in the community. And so getting those folks together tends to benefit everyone and pay off. The membership kind of people show up as more of a conversation that people can show up and attend as their schedule permits, but we host that every month on the fourth Thursday at 2 o'clock. And if you or anyone else who's catching this recording or the meeting minutes is ever interested, please reach out to me at Public Health and I can get you on the list for those meetings if you're not already. So yeah, thank you for that question, Noah.
Farmland Preservation Task Force, you can see the details in your agenda, but just in case you don't want to read, the city lease has this revisions to the city leases, which we've been city leases of agricultural land. This has been ongoing for a while now, and a new revised lease template will be introduced to the Common Council March 25th, based on a lot of the recommendations from the Farmland Preservation Task Force, as conveyed by Nan Fay to a lot of people. And it'll be referred to multiple committees over the next few months, with probable final action May 6th, I think. If everything goes, through those committees without amendments or changes or rejections, which will mean that those new lease templates will not be used until 2076, which will also give time for the city to talk with current farmers about changes to the lease, mostly related to best practices for erosion control, as well as prohibiting pesticides, I think mostly herbicides. And bringing things into compliance with state regulations and how the county does things. I can answer some questions about this if you're interested. I see nothing there. that over to Josh Perkins for your very first update. No pressure.
Yeah, thank you. I thank you for the no pressure. I don't feel pressure, but I have to say, I communicate consistently with Dustin, or have communicated consistently with Dustin as he sat on the council. So, rather than having a lot of new information for the group, I think I would, what might be most constructive, I'll relay how we go about this, how we discuss. He always checks in with me and says, "What should I bring to the group?" And I ask about the agenda. So it's a little bit secondhand, but normally we would, and I'm sure this happened with Dustin's participation, relay things like, "Well, we're starting to work with this new local food supplier." These sorts of things. But I'm really, to be honest, I've really been curious about the makeup of the council and the role of MMSD in this body of discussion. Dustin normally asks me for updates, and I think he relays what I ask him to. And I'm interested to know what the council would like to know about MMSD's action as an agent in the food system in the city.
Since I'm in charge, I can just talk
Yeah,
without
cool.
raising my hand. I would say the Madison Metropolitan School District, from my perspective, personally, I don't have a bigger vote than any of the other members, is mainly exists as a buyer of food, and a provider of food to a lot of the, well, let's just go with almost a lot of the children in the city, in the county. And then I think, to a lesser, more limited extent, there's the school gardens going on through the school district, which I think, and then also like the farm to school things, which is related to, or not so much related to, but as part of the purchasing of food. So yeah, that's, I think, the sense in which I your involvement, and I'll let Devika say thank you.
I love that you asked that question, Josh. I think that there is just, the importance of the school food landscape for all the reasons that Nicholas mentioned, and then just the importance in early childhood nutrition and food security. Obviously schools play a huge role in all of that, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to think strategically and cooperatively about all like the kind of like the food security landscape in Madison. And it's just great to be able to have MMSD in that conversation. And so yeah, I love that you asked that question, and I think we should just be thinking about it and kind of like have more of those conversations about how can we be strategic and collaborative in that space. And I often think about it too, like for example, because I work at Second Harvest, and I know Brian Squire, works really closely with schools in the food security space in terms of like the school markets and a lot of youth programming and things like that. And I know that, I believe, you and he have connected several times,
Yes.
and but I think again we could always be working, more collaboratively and just kind of yeah, I think this is a it's just great to have more engagement among all the players in the system. So thank you for your question. I hope we have a continuing discussion about it.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it, and it will just help me. Most recently, I think he came to a forum we did at the Goodman Center. It was a tasting and discussion with a panel. One thing that I'll just bring this up because you reminded me of it, so thanks for that, that Brian and I did discuss, which involves Second Harvest, very instrumentally, is the idea of changing the presentation of donated foods. So Second, as you know, David, better than I, the Second Harvest and the MMSD have a long-standing partnership. And what Brian and I had discussed was trying to, I'll use the word stage food donations in a way similar to a farmer's market. So in to make it a little bit more of a situation where you could introduce the idea of shopping for fresh produce that's locally grown from a farmer's market, and also decrease some of the potential stigma of feeling like I am taking free food. That it, you know, a forum like that might be a lot more welcoming. Brian was enthusiastic about the idea. The situation for us often is that, like, I love talking about these ideas with community partners, and I also know everybody's extremely busy, including myself and my team. And so oftentimes we'll have a really fun, inspiring conversation only to kind of fall back on our core mission, of feeding kids in 46 schools, as many kids as we possibly can, has to trump everything else. So oftentimes that's where these things sort of fall by the way, but I would love to resurrect that conversation because it seems like a fairly easy reach. I shouldn't say that glibly, but I would love to pick that up too.
Nick.
Yeah, Josh, I want to echo Devika in saying thank you for just even asking that question. I think this is a great opportunity to have you as the director of the program here in this space. I think there's some great folks, and I'll follow up the meeting with a list of our members with some of their titles, just so you have a greater understanding of who's here on the call and who's not. But I just wanted to offer in response to your question, a couple of thoughts. You know, I think things that are of interest to the members are also around like big transitional seasonal of things going on in the school district, like, you know, the fall income form verifications. You know, if folks may, that can have huge ripple effects in terms of, you know, income data that the school district has access to, or the transition into summer feeding, I think is another point at which there might be some opportunities to learn about what's going on in the district and some of the challenges or changes or whatnot that you guys might be experiencing. And then lastly, you know, you may be hearing things differently than other sources about what's happening in the nutrition programs that you get reimbursed by. So that whether that's through DPI or from the feds, if you're hearing things about the school breakfast program or the school lunch program or any of the other feeding programs that intersect with the district, I think that'd be interesting for folks. So, you know, that there's been conversations around community eligibility and how that works and how that could change in the future. So things like that, I think, would be very enlightening for this group.
Thanks. In response to your question, if I'm hearing things that aren't in the public view, I'm not. This is all coming down pretty fast, and I'm waiting for some specific information. It feels like, to me, it feels like a lot of folks are looking for that. You see an announcement in the press and, well, what does that mean locally? I'm in the same boat as everybody else, trying to kind of waiting for like exactly what impact will that have. Yep.
Certainly. Hopefully in the future, you know, you'll have the insights that I think we may not in terms of impact of some of the conversations that are emerging, and we can pick your brain on that.
Yeah, thanks for introducing those topics, though. The fall push to get everybody to apply and summer feeding. Summer feeding in Madison is an interesting beast. I'm surprised sometimes we don't have heavier uptake on the programs, but we can talk more about that.
Thanks, Josh.
Sure.
And yeah, I agree. It's good to think about what we're doing here. And thanks, Nick, for sending that about all the people's titles. Double Dollars program. Don't see.
Nick, you're talking, but your mic is not working.
Okay, yeah, I was about to ask if that was everyone.
Okay, sorry, can folks hear me now?
Yes, right
You know,
now.
I apologize. This I got a new laptop here, and I think, yeah, I don't. I'm not sure if it cuts out again. Let me know. But George and I were on a call today about Double Dollars, and he can help me remember if there's things that I'm missing here. Double Dollars has the season at the Willie Street Co-op is coming to a close. Folks can still spend dollars until the start of the outdoor season in June, but they cannot get additional indoor market dollars from the Double Dollars Tuesdays at the co-op. Additionally, I think the goals always with the Double Dollars program are how do we, just like we talked about with seeds, how do we seed grants, how do we create additional funding avenues to expand, grow, and create sustainability long term for this program. So there's some work that's been done back in 2020 to develop a fundraising plan and portfolio of additional resources has been dusted off, and hopefully we can take that up, and our partners at Community Action Coalition who operate the program can help lead some new fundraising endeavors. George, anything you recall from that discussion?
Nothing on my end outside of, it is exciting. Well, what do they say? Everything comes back around. So it's exciting to see the report that was done in March of 2020, if anybody remembers, things were happening back then, come back around. And it's good to see CAC kind of looking into those things and look at, kind of novel ways to try to increase the revenue or the funding that's available for the program. So it'll be exciting to see what comes from that. I'm sure we'll have
Yeah,
more updates on it.
I'll offer one last thought that came up in our conversation today, which is just that, you know, as we discuss the impacts of all the nutrition programs being under threat, you know, you can see a nutrition assistance program is like SNAP that's critical to so many. Cutting that would also have ripple effects to incentive programs that align themselves with it. So if you slash people's benefits or fewer people are able to apply for different criteria or eligibility reasons, suddenly we have less ability to identify folks who could qualify for those benefits in our local community and double their dollars, right? So the way our program operates is that you would double your SNAP or food share dollars, but if we don't have those dollars, there's nothing that to double. So that could create some needs for retooling or re-identifying some of those metrics to assign or help people participate in the program if they do lose SNAP benefits in the coming months or years. So I'll leave it there and we can discuss further in the future.
Thanks, Nick. Community gardens. Oh yeah, I did right. Okay. We did successfully host a community garden summit jointly with UW Extension. We being rooted. We had 65 attendees from 20 different community gardens, which included lots of things, including plans for tours around the community gardens. Different community gardens this summer, which I think will be a positive actual community focus of community gardens. Lots of anyway. Also, registration is ongoing at most community gardens, which are seeing increased demand, and our Rooted Community Gardens team is working with a few different groups who are looking to develop more growing space for people at a small scale in the coming years. As usual, you can see danegardens.net for contact information for a community garden near you. See, no questions for me. Food system assessment.
I don't have any updates. Rebecca, do you have any updates on this front? Maybe not.
Rebecca, I see you're unmuted and then muted again. But if you want to.
I'm unmuted.
Now you're unmuted.
I was unmuted. I was muted on my phone, but unmuted on Zoom, and now I'm unmuted on both, I hope.
No, I don't have any updates.
Okay. Business development specialist, thanks. George, you're still with us.
I am, but I don't have any updates. I guess what I'll say though is, you know, obviously, as folks know, I'm over in economic development, so I have a relatively large portfolio of projects, many of which are not 100% pertinent to the Food Policy Council. And so I guess I don't feel it's appropriate sometimes to report on all those things. I do obviously have some projects that are pertinent to the Food Policy Council. What I'd like to do is, I think I've done this in the past, is maybe quarterly or three times a year, I try to put together a slide deck where I can go through all of those things and just provide more, you know, substantive updates. So I guess I probably could share some updates, but they're not that big of updates on some of the things. And so what I'd like to do here in the next, you know, couple of months is be able to put together something where I can, you know, spend 5 to 10 minutes just going over some of the things in my portfolio that are germane to the Food Policy Council and provide those updates to folks. But today is not that day. And so I don't have any updates. I think that folks would, well, you might care about it personally, but I don't think you would quote unquote care about it as a Food Policy Council member. So soon come though. So thanks.
Thanks, George. Everything relates to food. Nick, you wanna take public health? I'll do. I mean, you obviously take public health. I can do Jess.
No, you can take the public health update there. No, I have no updates beyond what I've already shared tonight. Happy to field questions though.
Okay, and then Jess sent over the extension update, which is that Dane County received 34 applications for the 2025 PIE Food Project Grant, which is the sort of county version of SEED. Total amount requested was 126,000. The total funding will be 40,000. So not quite as extreme as SEED, but still lots more requested. Sorry, that's my commentary. I'll just end there. And you can't ask me questions since I'm not Jess. Any announcements? Okay. If no one has any announcements, does anyone want to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Thanks, Alder Evers.
Second.
Thanks, Rebecca.
That was Lindsay.
Oh, sorry. Okay. I'll assume unanimous consent for adjournment unless I see a hand for that. I think Alder Evers is waving goodbye, I hope. Okay, we are adjourned. Thanks, everyone.